Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Felt is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard.
This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Prints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and a wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Prints at instantprints.com/Boise or call 200-IMPRINTS, that's 208-467-7468. Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Felt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Carl Felt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobel.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started.
Okay, my name is Leslie Jones and I live in Portland, Maine. I am a native Mainer.
You're a native Mainer, so you're true, not far away from Connecticut. Yeah, Lyme, Connecticut.
Well, I'm about 2 hours north of Boston.
Okay.
Yeah, Portland is a coastal city of about 65,000 people.
Oh, okay. So tell me a little bit, I know Tanya's going to join us in just a little bit. So tell me a little bit about where it all started. I mean, when did this story begin?
All right. Well, I would say that my Lyme journey probably started somewhere around 2007. What happened with me is the winter of 2006, 2007, I was sick for about 14 out of 18 weeks, which was very uncommon. I was generally the type of person that didn't even take an aspirin. And I was concerned that I got a cold, I got the flu, I got a cold. My immune system was really run down. And then I came down with bronchitis, which was also uncommon for me. And I had some other symptoms going on, but they were more in the background. Like one of my very first symptoms of Lyme disease was my feet were sore when I got up in the morning and I would walk. So it was almost like being lame. And then I also noticed that I was starting to get, I had more of an allergic reaction to things. For instance, I couldn't walk down the chemical cleaning aisle at the grocery store. And I also didn't tolerate mold very well. And then there were some other things too, like I would get fuzzy in the afternoon. And the only way I can describe it is it was like brain fog. And I didn't really put everything together until I got sick that winter and I was sick for so long.
Yeah.
So some other things that happened with me is that I used to be a type A personality. I was the person that people would come to solve problems. My background was in nonprofit management. And I noticed that I started having psychiatric symptoms too, like anxiety and crying jags. And this was not anything that had happened to me before. And I was no more stressed in terms of my job or my life than normal, although I did have a myriad of symptoms. And of course, being in New England and in Maine, being a woman of Caucasian descent, I was concerned that I might be developing MS because this often happens to people in their early 40s, and I was in my early to mid 40s. So I was very concerned about that. And then I was concerned that maybe I had lupus, because that's something that someone in my family had, and I was trying to make sense of it. So what happened is when I had bronchitis, my primary care physician put me on antibiotics. And within a couple of days, I was so sick, I didn't know what was happening to me. And at the time, I wasn't familiar with Herxheimer reaction. And for those who might not know what that is that when you treat Lyme disease, which is a spirochete, when you treat that with antibiotics, they die off and they release neurotoxins. And you actually get sicker before you get better. I literally felt like a truck had run me over. I thought I was dying. I drove myself to the emergency room and they ran a bunch of tests on me. They tested to see if I was pregnant. And I thought that was ridiculous. I'm like, you know, I've never been pregnant, but I was pretty sure that that was not how you feel. It was so bad that like my hair hurt. And I think anybody who's ever experienced a Herxheimer reaction will understand what I mean by that. But everything in my body hurt, felt like I had been run over by a steamroller. The other thing that happened I felt like I had no immune system. Anything that, you know, cold, flu, anything that was going around, I would get it. And I also developed acute exhaustion. And what that looked like is I was dragging myself to work and I would sleep 14 to 16 hours a day. So I would go to work, I'd go home and sleep. I'd go to work, I'd go home and sleep. And at the time I was working as a program director at a nonprofit, which actually plays a part in my story that I'll tell you later on as part of my recovery. So what happened is I was actually talking to a therapist about my anxiety, which was uncommon for me. And she said to me, "Have you been tested for Lyme?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, actually, I was tested for Lyme." And she said, "What test did you have?" I said, "I had the ELISA." And then that was when my therapist told me that it's 79% false negative. So I was also given a second test when I took myself to the emergency room. So Lyme disease was kind of on the radar for my PCP and for the emergency room, but they were administering the ELISA test, which, as I said, is a 79% false negative. So when it came back negative, of course, I thought, I don't have Lyme, and I was terrified that I had lupus or MS or some other brain cancer. I didn't know what was going on. I also started to develop mixing up my words, which they call spoonerisms. And I would say these crazy things and people would laugh, think I was being funny. And I was mortified and embarrassed. I'd always considered myself a wordsmith and verbose and I able to communicate effectively. So when that started happening, it was really embarrassing. And I would say to my friends, "Do I seem different to you?" And they would say, "No, you don't seem different to me." But in my head, I felt like it was full of cotton and I couldn't think of the words. I couldn't get the words out. So just to be, just to let you know, I never had the bullseye rash. And it's possible that maybe I got bit on the top of my head and I didn't see the rash, but I don't ever recall being bit by a tick and having a rash, having that flu symptom. The only thing I vaguely remember was in late fall, I went to get a massage and my massage therapist told me that I had a rash. And I don't really know to this day if that was an indication of Lyme disease, but it was around the same time and I had this weird prickly rash. Could have been anything, but I sometimes wonder if that wasn't connected.
Frequently the bullseye rash, I mean, that's very rare, actually. Yeah, mm-hmm. it does right. happen. And most yeah. people don't remember the tick, you know, being bit by the tick. And this kind of rash on the hands, I mean, it can be that maybe you've had like an immune system reaction to that you were bit and you had a rash because of that. But it's, mm-hmm. you know, it could have been many other things as well, obviously.
Right. I mean, where I live in Maine, it actually has one of the highest incidences of Lyme disease. But I didn't know this, of course, at the time. And this was, you know, we're talking 2008, 2007. So let's say that maybe I got bit in 2006, 2007. And by time, you know, everything kind of collapsed, I had, you know, I had full blown Lyme disease, but I didn't know it. So what happened is, you know, after talking to my therapist, who unfortunately her husband had several tick-borne diseases, so she was very familiar with it. And, you know, I think sometimes when people become more familiar with Lyme disease, they, you know, my husband sometimes teases me that he thinks that I think everybody has Lyme. you know, somebody's got to, but I always say, you know, get tested, especially if somebody's experiencing pain in their feet, fogginess, can't express themselves, there maybe a personality change, exhaustion. You know, my doctor used to say, when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras. But I feel like in my case, it wasn't just the cold, flu, bronchitis, it was Lyme disease. And 12 years ago, people were not as Lyme literate as they were now. So I feel like my story is very typical for what happened with people who got Lyme disease. First of all, you know, they didn't have a rash. Maybe they got a test, maybe they didn't. It was terribly difficult to find a Lyme literate doctor. My general practitioner, he was a great doctor. He was my doctor for 25 years, but he was not familiar with Lyme. It was a growing epidemic here, but very few people were on the front edge of that, so to speak, didn't recognize how prevalent it was and how prevalent it was becoming. I remember sometimes people would, I remember a woman maybe 30 years ago, she told me that she had Lyme disease and she caught it probably maybe just 10 miles from here. And I remember thinking, oh, even though that was close, I was thinking, I always thought Lyme was like something that happened somewhere else, like Connecticut or New Jersey. And to make this story a little bit more interesting, around the time that I got Lyme, I could have gotten it in Maine, but I also went to visit my sister who lives in an area where there was a study done in New Jersey. They collected ticks, and I think it was 2 out of 3 ticks were infected with Bartonella.
Oh, really?
So she lived in an area, and I remember she took me walking on a preserve, which had lots of deer and small animals. And I remember this too, her cat came in the house, and I went to pick him up, and all along the bottom edge of the cat's lip were ticks all along his head. And I said to my sister, Becky, you know, your cat is covered with ticks. And she's like, oh, and she looked at it. And this was early spring. It was Memorial Day weekend. I went to visit her. And so we went to the store and we bought the cat one of those collars. And I do remember the cat got on my bed. I was a guest at her house and he jumped on my bed, and I remember moving him off the bed. And I often wonder if, like, you know, we put the collar on the cat and the ticks jumped on the bed, and then I went to sleep and the ticks got on me.
Yeah.
And, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, I don't know where I got it. I got it somewhere. And the really sad part of my story is that I was four years undiagnosed.
Wow.
So I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And it wasn't until in 2007, 2008, when I ended up in the emergency room because I had been treated for bronchitis, which was an antibiotic, and I had the Herxheimer reaction. And my therapist recognized so many of these symptoms, and she recommended a doctor to me. And that's kind of where my healing begins.
So what kind of doctor did she recommend, and what kind of test did that individual do?
Yep. Well, so we have an interesting situation in Maine where, sadly, doctors are not allowed to write long-term antibiotic use. And fortunately, I had this terrible experience, but sometimes I think fortune was smiling on me, because A, my therapist recognized it. B, she pointed me in the direction to a doctor in New Hampshire. And at the time, I was working for this nonprofit, so I had pretty good insurance coverage, and they actually covered my out-of-state. So I traveled down to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is about an hour away, and I met a doctor. A lot of times I know in the Lyme community, they don't want to use doctors' names. He's actually quite recognized in the area. He's semi-retired, and he's spending a lot of time on his boat. So I don't know if other people, I mean, he's still taking patients, but not as many as he used to treat. So anyways, I went down to New Hampshire and he ran a Lyme test. And of course, he ran what's called the Western blot. He sent it to Palo Alto, California, to Igenix Laboratories. And in order to be recognized that you have Lyme disease, you have to have at least 4 out of 10 on what I believe is called a titer. And mine came back 10 out of 10. So the CDC recognized that I had full-blown Lyme disease. And it was very strange. So what happened is I had the antibiotic treatment. I had my first appointment with Dr. Heck. He sent the test away, came back, and then he was going to write me a prescription. But that weekend before I started treatment for Lyme, I was volunteering at a garden project here in Maine through the cooperative extension at our university. I used to be a television producer as well, so I was volunteering in that capacity. And I was carrying, 12 years ago, the cameras were even just a little bit bigger than they are now, which is small, our phones. But I was carrying a camera that would have used a tripod, more of a television production quality camera. And I carried it for a long time. The next morning, it was like overnight, I woke up with fibromyalgia. It was horrible. It was like that day of carrying around a heavy camera, dehydrated in the heat, immune systems run down. I haven't started my treatment for Lyme. I've had it from anywhere from 4 to 6 years untreated. And my life changed. It changed overnight. And so that coincidentally, that next Monday, my naturopath called in treatment for antibiotics. And believe it or not, I spent the next 4 years on antibiotics. And my primary care physician and my therapist and many other people became part of my healing team. My doctor, my PCP, who had known me for like 25 years, he said that it was a miracle that I didn't develop C. diff from being on antibiotics for so long. And we have some resources, although we're not a very big city. We have Greater Portland, which is about 125,000 people. Our city is about 65,000 people. We have a lot of what I would say big city resources. So, you know, I was able to get access to the care, the meds that I needed, the supports that I needed. But I will tell you that it was a very long, painful journey that I did not know if I was going to survive. So I say that quite honestly.
Yeah. So what kind of antibiotics, was it the same or did they pulse them?
No,
or did they?
No, I think I was on at least, I would say I was on at least 24 different meds. My whole body was like in collapse. I started with doxycycline, and you know, generally people who have had short-term Lyme might do that from 2 to 4 weeks. I think I was on doxycycline for at least 4 months, and then I was moved to other antibiotics, and we pretty much tried everything. And for some people who might be familiar with Lyme treatment, they do what's called pulsing. So Lyme is a very insidious and fascinating bug.
I agree.
It has three forms. One is the spirochete, which is a corkscrew bacteria. And that, when it's in that form, it has the ability to wind its way into your white tissue. So it can get into your tendons. And these are, and all parts of your body. I mean, some people have carditis, so it goes into their heart. I don't know a person who's had a bad case of Lyme that doesn't have, you know, some part of their body that seems to be worse. For me, I think it was my nervous system. And when I was younger, I had shingles, which is in the herpes family. It's kind of like chicken pox, but it wraps around your body. And I think that because my nervous system was already taxed from shingles, that was like the weakest link in my body. And that's probably why I had, you know, panic attacks and anxiety and unexplained crying jags. You know, my nervous system just felt like it was depleted and exhausted. So, and then it also has another form, which is like it actually takes the shape of an L shape. And I'm not really sure what it does in that stage, but it's like a transitional. And then it also goes into what's called a cyst form. And this bug is so insidious that when you bombard it with antibiotics, it changes its shape. And the cyst form can lay dormant in your body for like up to 2 years. So that's why people will often pulse. They'll go on antibiotics, they'll detox, they'll go on different antibiotics. And you have to keep mixing it up so that in order to eradicate this infection. And I also had, I had the Bartonella, which, and I also had Babesia.
Well, and I've been advocating for Lyme for about 5 years, and I have never met anyone who's had 10 out of 10 bands. I mean, you did it really good. You went all in on that one.
It's your type A personality. You want to do it right.
I couldn't just have four, just enough to qualify to the CDC. Yeah. But I think it's also, I mean, as you probably know, there's over, supposedly they used, at the time they said, oh, there's only like 30,000 new cases a year. And then in the last 10 years, the CDC has amended that and they say it's 300,000. Now, I know that they're only counting those that have a titer of four or more. So what happens to the people that are just on the line, just got infected, or, you know, somehow their body's fighting that infection? So I bet you that the number is probably 10 times that again.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, I wasn't CDC positive and I was on my deathbed. So there's definitely way more cases that are counted, unfortunately.
Yep. It's when you look at the sheer numbers, it's this silent epidemic that I don't feel is getting enough attention. It doesn't have enough research. It's not being counted, and therefore it's not being treated.
And that's why we're doing these things. I mean, people need to know, people need to understand, you know, the severity of it and how broad it is. I mean, it's not rare cases. I mean, a lot of people with severe autoimmune conditions, you know, and even just simple things like chronic fatigue, you know, these are, you have Lyme disease is a spectrum. You know, you can have the severe cases and you can have the mild cases, but the mild cases still can have Lyme. Yeah. So,
right.
Yeah. So
the so-called mild cases, as you said, you said, Tanya, you can end up feeling like you're on your deathbed.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when you said earlier in your story that you try to diagnose everyone with Lyme, you know, honestly, I kind of do the same thing. And I love to hear that you do that as well, because so many people don't know about Lyme disease. And, you know, they get mistreated for many things, misdiagnosed, and then sometimes even just simply called crazy, go see your therapist. So I'm always saying, you know, if you ever have something and you don't know what it is, and it's all these weird symptoms, you know, look into Lyme, you know, but then you always got to follow that up too with, you can't just go to your primary and get a test done because it's inaccurate. Mm-hmm. So there's so many different avenues you have to go down. But like Dr. Carl Felt said, that's why we're doing this show. So we can share with people what it's all about.
So
I haven't met anybody that said, oh, I got Lyme. I mean, I got bit by a tick. I got a rash. I went to the doctor. They gave me 2 weeks doxycycline. I was fine. I haven't met anybody like that. Yeah. Everybody's like, you know, it's like, I didn't feel good. And then I kind of remembered I got bit and I haven't felt good for a while. And finally my doctor, you know, and people are, you know, now I think things are more proactive. Doctors are actually writing it prophylactically. So if you think you got bit, they're going to give you it. And they used to give you 10 days. Now they're like, well, we're going to do two weeks. And if you push them, you can say, well, you know, I think this has been a little longer. I'd be more comfortable with 3 weeks or whatever. And then if you have a huge reaction, you have to think about that too. Like, how deep has this disease burrowed into your body?
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why there's so many chronic cases of Lyme disease is because it doesn't get caught fast enough.
And like, yep. like you're saying, that the only solution a lot of practitioners have are the antibiotics. And then if the Lyme goes in a cyst form, I mean, you need a 100 times stronger antibiotics to be able to even touch them. And mm-hmm. and so, and that's the key why you then, do the pulsing so that they feel secure enough to go into their spirochete form so that you can address them then, but then combining them with other things as well. So I'm curious, I mean, you did the doxy, and what are some of the other antibiotics that you remember?
Oh my, Zithromax. There were so many. I'm terrible at the medical part of remembering, and I don't have my notes with me. But if you mention some, I might be like, oh yeah, I took that. But the other thing that happened is I actually, because I was so sick, I also had vitamin B shots. I had progesterone. I had Promethrium, I think it was called. And I feel like, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the ATP balance in your body, mine was completely out of balance. My sleep was disrupted. I had no energy. When I was at work, I would have these constant fight or flight feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I was having constant bouts of that, and it left me depleted. So I just feel like everything in my body was out of whack. And I ended up gaining something like, probably 60 pounds. And that was partly because I had no energy to do anything. But also, I just feel like even my metabolism was screwed up. Everything, nothing was working right. So being a naturopath, my doctor, he treated me holistically. And I want to say that before, when I was feeling run, it took these years for me to run down, I went to over, I'd say 20 doctors. I went to everything I could imagine to try to figure something out. And, and I feel like everybody kind of took me in pieces. The gynecologist looked at why my periods were irregular, and my therapist was, why am I having anxiety attacks? Although she was helpful eventually with the Lyme, my PCP was looking at, just certain pieces of it. And I feel like traditional Western medicine really, I'm sorry to say, cut me up into little pieces and was only treating part of me. But when I got to my naturopath, my very first appointment with him was 3 hours long. It was very expensive, but it was worth it.
Wow, yeah.
And he talked to me about everything. I cried through the whole thing. I said to him, I used to be really smart. I used to be able to talk and work, and I was a type A personality. And I don't know if I, to this day, at this point in my life, I don't think I regret not being a type A personality anymore. And maybe that was my secret gift of Lyme. But one of the things that I, as I think part of my later on healing journey, when you are sick with a chronic disease, you lose so much. You lose your health. You lose your ability to do what you used to do. It was very difficult for my family, for me not to be the person that I was. Because I had two infections, I used to get rage attacks, which again was not my personality. And I deeply regret that. But I would just freak out. It was like I couldn't stand being in my own body. I made my husband cry. I made my mother cry. And I've never, I haven't done that before, and I haven't done it since. But it was just so many different things. And I know we have limited time, so I do want to move on to my treatment. What happened, I was telling you that I had some resources. I had, my therapist, my PCP, and then I found my doctor down in New Hampshire, who was a lifesaver. And I had very good insurance, but I want to tell you that I spent an additional $40,000 out of pocket getting better. And I'm grateful that I had that money. I would have rather, gone to Europe for
vacation.
10 years. But I'm grateful that I had it. And I think that that's another barrier in people getting better, because the traditional treatments, there's certain things that are covered. They're only covered for a certain period of time. I was lucky that my doctor was in New Hampshire, so he could write long-term antibiotic use for me. If it had been someone in Maine, he could have lost his license for doing that, and I needed that. So I was in treatment for 4 years. As I said, I had antibiotics, but I really do want to stress that I needed to be treated holistically in order to get better. And there were a lot of things that helped me get better. I don't think you have this there, but I have something here in Maine. It's called a time bank, and it's a service exchange network of neighbors helping neighbors based on the currency of time. So even though I spent a great deal of money, I was able to add to my treatment by getting massages for time. So let's say, for example, I go and mow your lawn for an hour. I earn one time dollar, and I can spend that within the network of 1,000 people. And some of them, at the time, the time bank was offering a tremendous amount of healthcare services. So we were in partnership with different people, but I was able to get things like massage, and massage helped me a lot. I think particularly because it calmed down my nervous system, and it generally feels great. I did everything that I could possibly do. I even saw a shaman, because at some point I realized that I not only had to heal my body and my mind, but I had to figure out what I was doing with my spirit. Losing myself to Lyme, which I did for a long time, and I will tell you that being in treatment for Lyme was probably worse than having Lyme, if you can understand that.
Yes.
Because of the Herx reaction, the exhaustion, and the excruciating pain. I had fibromyalgia, but I had pain that I can't even explain. It was like my bones hurt, like my bones were cracking inside. And I probably had migraine headaches for 2 years. And the fact that I didn't, quite frankly, kill myself or curl up in a ball and just die, I attributed, I think, partly to the support system that I had around me, but also my resilient nature. Having a headache every day of your life, every day for years, waking up and knowing that you're going to be in pain.
Why wake up? We don't even want to get out of bed.
Yeah, you don't want to, and how you can function. And so what I had to do was I had to compartmentalize my life. I always had this pain in the back of my head, but I would just have to steel myself to do my work or to take a bath or whatever. And so one of the things when I was so sick is that I just started researching this. As I said to you, I was a television producer before I was in nonprofit management. And I read everything I could. You know, I read Cure Unknown. I couldn't watch the movie that they made about Lyme disease because I saw highlights and trailers of it, and it was too discouraging. And one of the things that I realized is that, you know, treating my mind, body, and spirit, I had to be very careful with everything. I couldn't drink alcohol. I couldn't stay up too late. I couldn't eat bad food. I couldn't be in the aisle with strong smells, but I also couldn't put junk into my brain, like, you know, stuff that was violent or depressing. So I literally watched comedy for like a year because I needed something to lift me up and get me from, you know, little tiny baby steps, point A to point B. But so I was telling you about the time bank, and I was able to leverage that asset in my community to help me to get better. So anything that I could do, anything, I had sound healing work done where a woman came and she did sound energy healing over my body. I went to see a shaman who like connected me with my inner guides. So I'm just saying that there wasn't anything that I wasn't going to do. And I was able to access very interesting community support here, and not for cash, for time. So my husband baked bread. I had earned some time dollars before when I felt well. We had something called a garden share. So I let people use my garden to grow vegetables because I wasn't going to be able to do it. I also developed a phobia of the outdoors. Not surprisingly. I did not want to be outdoors. I remember one time I was in a restaurant downtown and one of those huge deer ticks climbed on me and it like an urban restaurant and I flipped out. I was I was with people and I like got up, I whacked the bug off me and I like literally screamed and everybody in the restaurant looks at me, but I had this huge phobia. Like, I can't get bit again. I can't get bit again. You know, what's going to happen if I get bit again? All these things that you have to do to manage manage yourself. Are we on a 30-minute timer? I just want to.
Yeah. So,
I just want to open a door because it's really hot where I am.
No problem at all.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about all those things, I mean, truly Lyme disease is an absolute life-altering disease. And yes, when we get better, we do get a life back. But I don't think it's our old life. A lot of times that's good. You know, we just have to figure out how to make that new life work for us and how to make it good. And, you know, me, for example, educating and advocating for Lyme is what helps me. But you're right, when it just truly changes every aspect of your life.
When I thought about, so I had some friend, one of the things that really helped me was infrared heaters and saunas. I knew that if I could get my body temperature up to 104, like from a hot tub or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I took it right to the edge. I even asked talked to my doctor and I said, is there any like other disease you can give me that will cause my temperature to spike? So and he's like, you know, that's too dangerous. We can't do that. But I'm like, I don't know, cholera, anything, what you can do. So I was like trying to like, so anyways, I did it more safely by getting in hot tubs. But I had a friend and she gave me it's called a hot house, and it's like this, and you can slide it over your body, and it's made with ceramic. It's an infrared heater, and what it does is it heats you up on the inside. And I don't know if you had this symptom, but one of the things happened to me, I was always cold. So this infrared heater did two things. It helped heat me up when I was always cold, and it was raising my temperature so that I could naturally kill the bugs. And then my mom, bless my mom, who has been my angel through all of this, she bought me my own infrared mat. And I'm going to plug for it. It's called Richway Biomat.
Oh, and I have the same exact one.
And we do as well.
Yep, wouldn't live without it.
Right. I slept with that mat for years. I'm actually thinking about buying a new one. I don't need it as much. The interesting thing was when I got started my treatment in August, and I was in so much pain, I didn't know what to do because of the Herx reaction. My mom had recently had shoulder surgery, so she gave me, it's like this vest that you wear that you can fill it with freezing cold water. So it I laid in my recliner and I just kept, I asked my husband to change the water and I just kept freezing my muscles because I was in so much pain from the die-off. And I was so grateful that I started my treatment in August because I couldn't have imagined trying to freeze everything when I was, you know, if it had been December in Maine, you know, or January in Maine.
Yeah.
It gets, you know, you're in Boise, cold. Right?
Yeah.
You know, right? It's cold there. So the biomat was helpful. I started eating organically. I bought the best food that I could afford. I had to cut out gluten. I still don't do gluten because I literally would eat a piece of bread and I would get a pain neck, like I was telling you about. Wow. It would like increase. It was almost like a meter. Eat bread, boom, pain. So I had this thing where, you know, it was like, I can't, and I couldn't eat anything that wasn't natural. Like I remember one time my mom, bless her, she made me a soup and it had monosodium glutamate in it. And I said to my mom, what's in this soup? Did you make it from scratch? And she's like, oh yeah, I made it. I'm like, come on, really? Cause it, you know, it just tasted a little funny to me.
Scratch from a can. Yeah.
Scratch.
I made it from a can. And I said, what's the brand? And she goes, I don't know. She said it had a bear on it or something. So I Google it. I look, I read the ingredients and I'm just about crying. You know, I'm like, I can't eat this. And my mom, she didn't understand, you know, she was really sweet. She was really supportive, but she didn't understand that whatever went into my body either was going to help me heal or was going to take me backwards. And it wasn't just a regular backwards. It was, you know, something like gluten or monosodium glutamate could literally wreck me for 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people, you know,
they don't understand
thought I was
that.
A picky eater.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't understand it. I went to a wedding and in an old church and in Maine, 75% of the buildings in a certain area of our city, I'm sorry, in Portland, have mold because we're Old City. They don't burn anymore like they used to burn. So we've got these old buildings. We've got lots of moisture. If I went into a building with mold, I would be sick for days. And my naturopath, he did a test, and I have the MTHFR gene, which means that I respond with, what is it, histamine production for allergens. And I don't just go a little bit, you know, I go the whole way.
You do. You, we already know that you go all in.
So I want to tell people some other things that, helped. Definitely. Oh, this is one of the things I think that helped me the most. I had to get a tremendous amount of sleep, and I had to get solid sleep. I did go on, something to help me sleep, and I was on it for years, and then I finally decided to get off it, and it was very difficult to quit, and it was part of what I would say my early tool chest. Had I known how difficult it would have been to get off something that was helping me sleep, I don't know if I would have ever taken it, or I would have taken it for as long as I did. So I know that, you know, for some people that sometimes you need, it was clonazepam, and clonazepam. I think I told you I'm terrible with these.
Same thing. I think generic, whatever. That yes.
Right, but I was on that for a long time because I mean, there were times when I wouldn't sleep at all. But I don't think that was actually like, I wish I had been more careful about it. I didn't know how addictive it was and that it was going to disrupt my sleep when I tried to get off it. And I also didn't realize how hard it was going to be. I cold turkeyed it one day. I know that you're not supposed to, but I tried it and I thought that I was being poisoned to death. And I called my niece, who was a doctor, and I told her what's happening. And she says, it sounds like you're having withdrawals. And I didn't realize that was so tough. So, then I switched to something more natural like melatonin and increasing magnesium and calcium and taking lavender baths. And, so for me, doing it as being as natural as possible was better for me in the long run. The other thing, essential oils helped me with some things. And, I was telling you, so before I would go to bed, I had an attitude of gratitude logbook. And it was pretty pathetic at the beginning. I challenged myself to write 5 things that I was grateful for. And these are days that I felt like I wanted to die. But I made myself write the 5 things. And because I'm me, I said, if I can write a 6th thing, I get a bonus in my head. I get a bonus. You know?
A+.
Right. I get an A++. I graduate with 105, right? So I wrote, sometimes it was my bed, my pillow, my blanket, my cat, water. And then it'd be like, I'm lucky I have a roof over my head. I'm lucky I have family that contacts me. And I have a husband who is holding down the fort and will, I had to have, there was a medicine that I had to have, not just the vitamin B shots, but it was another type of antibiotic. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it, but I had to have shots in my behind. And my husband had to give me these shots, and I was terrified of them because they're like, oh, if you hit a nerve or if you hit a blood vessel or something, it's not good. So I have this one freckle on my butt, and every time he'd give me a shot, I'm like, hit the freckle. And after about 2 months of giving me shots, and it was 2 shots, the lidocaine and then the antibiotic, he knew what he was doing, and I couldn't have given myself those shots. So I would write, I'd like, even though I didn't want a shot, I'd say, I'm grateful for the medicine. I'm grateful for Dr. Heck. I'm grateful for my biomat. And then I believe that those things kept me hopeful. And that's probably like the number one thing that people might need who are suffering from chronic Lyme disease, because there are days you don't think you're ever going to get better. I want to tell you that it's, 12 years now. I am no longer a manager.
No Congratulations.
Longer a nonprofit. Yeah, I'm no longer a nonprofit director. I am a nanny, and I chase babies around.
Oh.
So I am doing pretty well.
Wow.
I'm 12 years older, and I'm chasing little kids around.
See, nobody with fibromyalgia would do that.
Right.
Yep. My fibromyalgia is managed with Cymbalta, duloxetine, and it is my hope that someday I can get off that, but I am not suffering the way that I was. It used to be like if I picked up anything more than 5 pounds, I would have excruciating pain in all those hot spots that mm-hmm. they mention. And the only thing that happens now is if I don't get enough sleep, I get those hot trigger points in my body. So I have to be very careful. I still get massages, although I'm not getting them through the time bank. I'm paying cash for those, unfortunately. But I believe that the massage is part of my continued self-care.
Yeah.
And so is eating organically. And I think one of the things I had to do which was really hard for me, is I had to learn to say no. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. It's like, I can't do that. And I had to tell my friends, you know what, listen, on Tuesday, you asked me to go out on Friday, and that nothing sounds more fun than to go out and do that. But come Friday at 4 o'clock, I might have to. Are you familiar with the 12 spoons?
The spoon theory, yes. Very popular. And the lady who wrote that, talking to her best friend, I mean, such an amazing detailed description on what we deal with. So I think
it's
fantastic.
That to everybody I know. Yeah.
Yes.
They don't understand that you're not the same person. You can't do everything that you used to do. And it's very disappointing. I believe it or not, so I was sick for 4 years. I was in treatment for 4 years. And I would say that I've been in remission now going on 5, 6, and I'm doing really well. And about 4 years, 4 years in, 4 years, about the first year where I would say I was in remission, I decided to go to Portugal. I'd always wanted to go. And this friend of mine said she'd go with me. And I was terrified that I was going to get there and not be able to get out of bed. And I said to her, you know, I don't want you to be really disappointed if we get to Portugal and the traveling itself devastates me, or I spend 4 days in bed and then we've got, you know, 5 days to do stuff.
Right.
But we walked probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 miles a day. And I never felt better. I was
wow.
so happy to be there. I did really well. And my friend said to me, listen, if for some reason you can't do it, don't worry about it. I'm going to still go looking. I'm still going to go. You can sleep and I'm going to go, you know, out to eat.
Those are
whatever.
The friends we like.
Yeah. So she was really great to go with me and to realize my limitations. And fortunately it wasn't that way, but you know, I will tell you honestly that I did lose some friends and family
yep.
Through this transition. And that probably was really hard and painful to realize. And, you know, it's funny, the people you sometimes think that are going to be there for you, that for whatever reason in their life and your life, they can't be. I was also surprised that some of the people who I didn't know very well and didn't know that they were going to be there were some of the people that helped me heal the most. So it was
you just
a real
never
bag.
Know, but it definitely is a way to learn who your true friends are. So I know that, and this may be it. What if there was one thing that you could share with the listeners right now that might be something just to push them a little bit further? What would it be? And I love your attitude for gratitude. I'm sharing that in my Lyme group tonight because it was great. But is there anything else that you would just add to those listeners that are battling right now?
I think that when you get sick, and no matter what it is, whether it's Lyme or cancer or whatever it is, you're going to discover what I call like the weakest link in yourself. And it could be anything. It might be bad knees. It might be anxiety. It might be nerves. Nerve damage. I think that you have to do the best that you can to treat yourself as a whole person, knowing that you've got a limitation here, you know, here, there, whatever part of your body is the weakest link, but also know that there's a part of you that is also the strongest part of you. And maybe that's your love of meditation, or you like to, for me, art got me through. I joined a play group called Play Nexus when I felt well enough, and they knew that I could sometimes come and not come. You have to find whatever those things are that literally got you up in the morning before you were sick, but might be the thing that saves your life when you're really sick. So if you love special music or a special comedian or whatever, create a vision board, put that stuff up in front of you and constantly remind yourself that better days are coming. I know that there are some people that have multiple infections. They've been sick for a long time. They may not have the community resources. One of the things that I promised that when I got better, I was going to pay it forward like you're doing through your show. I was going to tell people some of the things that I did. I know that one thing that came out of Lyme is that I am definitely more, I have more empathy for people than I ever had. My mom used to say, you can't feel another person's pain. And I don't think that I understood it. So I try to be patient with others and I try to be patient with myself. Yes. And you might, you know, maybe getting up and taking a shower is the best you're going to do that day. Celebrate it. Yay. You know, just, I mean, it sounds like an adage or a cliche, but whatever it is that helps you hold on to hope until you take those baby steps and, you know, hold on to whatever it is that gets you through the day. And if it's something like I told you, I watch comedy because laughing, I remembered Patch Adams was a doctor who used comedy to help people. And I did that and be very careful about what you let into your life. Don't get rid of toxic people. If there's somebody in your life, you got to let go because that's keeping you sick, keeping you down. If there's a friend that lifts you up, you know, let them know where you're at, hold on to them, let them know that you need them. I think that, you know, most doctors or healthcare people would say, you know, take the best care of yourself that you possibly can, but you don't have a choice when you have Lyme. You have to take the best possible care of yourself and you have to do it every day. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. Just take the best possible care of yourself and be so gentle with yourself.
Yes.
Be gentle.
Those are all very, very good. Very good comments for them, and definitely keep the toxic out of you. And sometimes, unfortunately, it is our family and our friends, but do what's important for you. Well, Leslie, your story was so incredible, and thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. It's
thank you.
Really going to give hope to a lot of those listeners out there. So thank you.
And if anybody ever wants to, you know, email me, they're welcome to do that. You've got my email. You can post it if you'd like. I'd be happy to, you know, share more in depth or suggest some of the, you know, specific things that help me, or even just say to somebody, I hear you. It's tough out there. And when we get better, it's really important to help the next person along the line.
It absolutely is. Well, and that's what you did today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Take care.
All right. Well.
Peace and healing.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Information this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Feldt.